working with a spirit of service. How do we take this from just an empty slogan to an actual concrete reality? That's the topic of today's episode. I'm Sharif Yunus with Dr. Kevin Majors. This is The Golden Hour. Welcome to another episode of The Golden Hour. I'm Sharif Yunus, and here with Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, welcome.
Sharif, it's great to be back.
Well, we got some interesting emails, had an interesting email exchange, and this is a topic that I've also been interested in to discuss is service, the idea of service. It's also on our website, one of the golden hours. It's actually the very last one. So we see it as kind of the pinnacle of working at your best, is working with a spirit of service. So I thought maybe, Kevin, we could get into this topic a little bit more and understand what exactly service is and how you actually work with a spirit of service.
It's a great topic.
So what is service? What does it mean to be have that as this kind of ideal that you're working towards?
I think that, and actually the second way you ask it is really important. I think that in some way you can think about how the work you're doing ends up helping others or benefiting others. And so a lot of times when people are thinking about the spirit of service or like, is my work serving others, they're thinking about the outcome of their work and then what good is that doing for people? And sometimes that actually is really helpful. I think I spend my time talking to patients. So thinking about how I can serve them better really immediately pulls all these things that I have to be, I think I have to be very understanding and compassionate and thorough. And, there's all these qualities that go into being a good doctor. And so some professions where you're like interacting with people all the time, it just makes it easy to have this really concrete way of thinking about service. But then people, and you can, we get emails from people or people leave feedback on the Service Golden Hour, and they're wondering, what exactly does this mean? For instance, if I'm doing, I'm writing a paper or I'm preparing a report for a class or for my work, and they don't see exactly how what they're doing, in fact, is serving others. Grad students especially struggle with that because it's such a long road. And so thinking, but how does, me studying about, the 17th century, peninsula here, how does that actually serve people right now? And so that can be sometimes the challenge.
And now in making this distinction, there's a distinction between kind of what you're doing and how you're doing it. Now there's limits in, like you just pointed out, to thinking in what you're doing. So would you say that really any type of work is kind of compatible with service? I mean, you would never say, you're a grad student, maybe don't be a grad, don't study this area because it's actually not going to serve society. But really anything like that can be done with a spirit of service, do you think?
Well, probably there are some kinds of, if your work is, being a child trafficker, well, then you're not going to be able to do that with a real spirit of service. And so obviously, what you're doing, though, is noble in itself, then it is definitely serving humanity, and helping humanity in a more general way to become more noble. So if what you're doing has actual value, that means it's benefiting people. And so it could be, benefiting, the culture in a broad way, extending our knowledge in some direction. I think if what you're doing, in fact, is not serving anyone, well, one, you're probably not going to be doing it for long because you won't get paid for it. If you're getting paid for something, it's because someone finds it of service. And if what you're doing isn't really honorable or noble, well, then you have to think about changing what you do. So, sometimes you have people who, they get into programming and they end up having to do lots of programming work for companies whose missions they don't support. But then it's then doing your work really well is not necessarily oriented towards service then. So they need to think about that. So I think we always want to be in touch with reality. And so if our work is actually, if you can see that it's noble and is benefiting, humanity, that's like one, That's like a necessary thing for the outcomes to meet that test. But the main thing about having a spirit of service is not about the outcomes. It's much more about your way of working. So I think that when you think of what it means to, you know, to work with that in service in mind, it means shaping yourself so that you're the kind of person who in fact is disposed to benefit everyone around you all the time. And you think then about, like, how are you shaping your way of dealing with the people closest to you and the people you work with on a regular basis that actually is making their lives better? I think that ends up being a much more constant and powerful. So even if you're like, you're a grad student, well, how is your attitude actually serving your fellow students and your way of being? So I think it has much more to do, and it's much more immediate when you use it as an ideal to be shaping yourself. And then it becomes just a way of actually being loving to the people in your life. And you think about, how can I really then, what would be the ways of growing in a spirit of service in that sense? You know, and so it would mean that you would be, you know, more disposed to value the other people in themselves rather than just using them as instruments or like their furniture sitting in a room with you. You know, but no, you, and it's not just about what they're doing for you, but it's actually having this like a personal care and concern, a willingness to form a bond with the people around you, a willingness to make small sacrifices for the people around you. They're really prioritizing them as persons. I think that's really what it means to be sincerely wanting to serve them. I think you can also think it's about how do you just be more forgetting about yourself. You know, how, you know, to be, you know, not focus so much on your own work, your own concerns, your own emotional state, but instead really try to get well tuned in to the people around you. If you could actually be caring about people and tuned into them, that's already doing, I think, enormous good. And then if you can work that way all day long, when you go back to your family, you're ready to be tuned in and caring about, you know, for them, really prioritizing the people that you have bonds with. And finally, the last thing I always include is just having a sense then of being willing to give yourself cheerfully to the people around you, cheerfully being available to help them, cheerfully going an extra mile to help them, you know, but that idea of like cheerful giving, that is what makes then the spirit of service into something very real. So it goes from being an attitude and how it shapes your attention to really now shaping your action.
And then you're just serving people by just in your normal day-to-day interactions, like at work, just by cheerfully doing your work. That's a real service to your coworkers.
Absolutely. And that's like 95% of the spirit of service. It's just how well do you treat the people around you? You know, it's, you know, when, if you go to Lowe's, you can have a spirit of service in a sense, the people helping you there, just by like being a real person, treating them as real people and having courtesy and having patience and having being appreciative and grateful. All of that would actually be serving them. So no matter what position you're in or what you're doing, people are never just pawns to be moved around. I mean, wouldn't it be great to have a manager who really was individually interested in the people under him and helping them to grow and thrive? And so you think of, even if like you have the CEO of a company, you know, and let's say, you know, she's really wanting her whole company to be successful for the sake of, you know, their families being able to thrive and the business doing well. Well, that'd be a very noble thing. So it means that you are always prioritizing people over projects. And so it's never just getting things done or meeting certain goals, but really is caring for the people and then forgetting about yourself to put yourself in their shoes and then cheerfully giving your, you know, your best to them.
Let me then read some of these emails that we got so we can try to apply this background to these issues. So the first one is someone who says, the concept of serving others as a final goal in my work is beautiful, but not appealing to me, and thus I don't find it motivating at all. How can I better understand it and apply it in my life? And then I asked him to elaborate a little bit, and he responded, I think I don't find it appealing, as it sounds to me as another big but empty slogan, with all due respect. Maybe because I'm more concerned about the people around me rather than a vaguely described group of people. So I love the directness of this question. And so I think, yeah, maybe this kind of gets to a question here, which is service in the abstract versus service kind of concretely lived out. And how do you, if you're just talking about generally having a spirit of service, then how do you prevent it from just becoming exactly what he's saying, a kind of slogan that I just broadly kind of want to serve society or humanity, but you actually want to bring it into the concrete relationships that you have right now. So that's, is that a tough kind of leap for people to make, do you think?
Well, I really like that he is wanting to prioritize the concrete relationships. Because that, again, I think that's where the gold is. And so, but if he were to ask himself, is there a way that I could be working that is more like sincere and humble and generous? Well, that has to be good, right? I think service, the spirit of service, has to, in the end, make us embrace generosity. Because that's really where it comes to giving your best. You really want to give the best of yourself in this task, but that's either going to be for, like, I don't know, maybe more selfish reasons. Like, I'm giving my best so I can get the highest grade or so I can make more money on this deal. Or it could be, in a sense, something that is a little more, like, noble, that transcends you. You know, and that it really is invigorating. I think the problem with selfish motives is they're not invigorating. You know, they just get empty and stale. But having the motive of serving others naturally invigorates us. And actually, people say that, like, after doing the service golden hour, that that's how they found it to be. So if, you know, you can look in your life and just ask yourself, if I really had more joy, would I be better at my work? I think, like, if, you know, if a person has day-long sense of joy and they are working at giving that to others, well, that would encapsulate all of the spirit of service. So I think, you know, this gets a deep point that emotions are always a kind of readiness to act. So if you're angry with someone, then you're ready to teach them a lesson, you know, and if you're afraid of something, then you're ready to flee. And if you ask yourself, what is joy? Because joy is an emotion. You know, what is joy a readiness to do? And I think joy is simply, as an emotion, a motive force, is a readiness to give. It's a readiness to give the best of yourself. And so when you have joy and a readiness to give, then you give that joy to others by generously serving them. And you find ways of making their life better, more pleasant, small ways, things that maybe they would never even notice. But it's just the consequence of having joy that you have a readiness to give yourself selflessly to the people around you. But it also gives you joy. And that's another great discovery, that we have the most joy, you know, when we're, it's a virtuous cycle. See, the positive emotions, when you act on their readiness, you know, then they increase. And that's a good thing. Actually, they all become virtues. Whereas the negative emotions, when you act on the readiness they give you, they become vices. And so, you know, if you're very grateful and you're feeling grateful, well, then the readiness to give thanks, you know, already then gives you, again, it makes you even more deeply grateful. So these, and that's the virtue of gratitude then. So I think joy is really, you know, at one level, it's just what we have when we're with people we love. But it also then allows us to form new bonds with people because we're disposed to give ourselves to people. And we're just, you know, and I've seen friendships form just from someone holding a door open for someone, you know, and then that becomes actually the basis of a long friendship. You know, that things get, you know, friendships get started in small ways, usually with small acts of service done cheerfully. But I think, you know, everyone loves a cheerful giver. It's also true the emotions, like, move through our bonds. And when we have a deep bond with someone, you know, if we're angry, we're going to, you know, give anger and get anger. And if, you know, if you're jealous, you give jealousy and get jealousy. If you give joy, by cheerfully serving, giving, you get joy. You know, and so that becomes the test, you know, of what really is our state right now? Well, it's often reflected, you know, in what we're getting back.
That's all super helpful. And I think it actually gets to another question that I have, which is kind of more generally about the field of psychiatry and psychology. It seems like maybe service isn't necessarily something that comes up directly, but then when you actually do bring it in and kind of make it your final goal, that it has all of these kind of ramifications throughout a person's psychology, where you get all these things that psychologists are very interested in. Like, just one example is that when you put a spirit of service as your kind of foremost goal, it makes reframing anything else possible. You know, it makes it possible to reframe any difficulty, and that enables you to, for example, like, attain flow when you're doing any task. And flow is a big concept in psychology now, a state of optimal experience. And so it seems like having service as an ultimate goal kind of fixes all these psychological problems that people might have. So, and that's one of the most exciting things about Optum Work, is that it seems to kind of unite all of these concepts, new concepts in psychology and neuroscience, in the framework of service. So I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit.
Much of the experience, you know, of people doing therapy, you know, is helping people, even think of like the kind of Freudian psychodynamic therapy. When you ask yourself, what are they really good at? Probably one of the things that they're actually good at are helping people who are narcissists, who are excessively self-focused. And in any kind of problematic relationship, there's some element of that going on. Well, in the end, they really are trying to help them to let go of the me first mentality, and everything is quid pro quo and everything is justice. I think that they see really clearly that the mark of people being healthy is that they're actually now strong enough and their egos hold together enough that they are able to authentically have relationships with others. They're able to authentically love and serve others. I think that they are not inclined to start with this as a motive, you know, but instead try to get there very gradually. And in general, with cognitive behavioral therapy, we try to get to those same ends in a much more direct way. So that what we're doing is to show the good of these things and how they benefit us, and then start to help people practice doing them step by step. So we tend to take these ideals and then try to form them into real strategies for growth. So it's just a different kind of approach. It's the approach that I typically use. Obviously, I think it's really good and it works very directly. But the goals, I think, in the end are the same: getting people to be capable of forgetting about themselves, not in some kind of pathological way where they now are just like happy being trampled on. We don't want people to do that. You know, that wouldn't serve others. You know, like, allowing others to take advantage of you isn't serving them. But we do want people to trust others enough to form these relationships of mutual service.
So then what advice would you give someone if, I don't know, say they're in work and they have a kind of difficult relationship with a coworker or a manager where it seems like, yeah, that person is not really trying to live the spirit of service. So how would you, what advice could you give to someone in that situation?
Well, maybe to paraphrase, you could say that, you know, where you find no service, put in service, and you will draw out service. So you need to become the quality you feel is lacking in your relationship. And the more you become that, the less it will be lacking. People do tend to reciprocate. So whatever you think is lacking in the relationship, make that your goal. Because you can't control other people and their goals. No, but you can work to really aim to grow yourself in that. And so I think one thing is even more important than that you have the spirit of cheerful giving, because it does spread. It's contagious. And so the more you can try bringing that to others, yet without looking for some kind of return on your investment right away, that's a huge mistake. You have to be willing to do it even if there's no return on your investment. The other thing is we tend to notice other, you know, especially in close relationships, we tend not to detect change too quickly. So if you're in a relationship that's frustrating, it could be with a family member or a boss, you can make all these positive efforts and there is going to be a lag time. So just because you're trying, you know, one afternoon at 4 p.m. to have a spirit of service doesn't mean it's going to be, you know, by 5 p.m. returned to you. No, it might take years. The other thing is not looking for big ways of doing it. Much better, look for very, very small ways of being thoughtful and serving. So it's not really what you do. It is literally the thought that counts. So I think it's the people see that you have this simple intention that's good, you know, and that you're basically just giving this goodness to others in very small, inconsequential ways. And that then starts them to be able to trust you in bigger ways. But you start small, very small acts of service. The smaller, the better, because they can be a little more continual. And then they start changing the tone of your interactions with them.
That's perfect, Kevin. Thanks. But you're not going to believe it, because it feels like it's only been a few minutes, but we've already reached our time limit. So I don't know, do you have any final thoughts to add on this topic of service or cheerfulness, generosity?
Only just to highlight the, you know, two points. One is that when you think of the service, don't think about the outcome of what you're doing. Think more about the atmosphere around you as you're doing it. You know, and is that one of cheerful giving? That, if you work on that in all day long in the office or working from home, you know, then it carries naturally to your relationships with those that you love. And the other to think of it really as joy is a readiness to give. And when you act according to it, you get more joy back. Those are the two final thoughts.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sharif.
We will be back next week.
Yes.
All right. Talk to you then. Well, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to check out OptimWork.com for a set of online tools to help you engage challenge in your life. See you next week.